Chapter 64, June 20th, 1996, Washington, D.C. The news of Lincoln's discovery and the Stanton hoax electrified the world as the body was reverently removed from the ironclad and flown back to Washington. In every school of the country, children memorized and recited the Gettysburg Address as their grandparents had. The nation's capital pulled out all stops on celebrations and ceremonies. Five living presidents stood in the Capitol Rotunda and paid homage at the open casket of their long-dead predecessor. The speeches seemingly went on forever, the politicians climbing over each other to quote Lincoln, if not Carl Sandburg. The 16th president's mortal remains would not go to the cemetery in Springfield. By presidential order, a tomb was cut into the floor of his memorial immediately below his famous white marble statue. No one, not even the congressional representatives from Illinois, considered protesting the interment. A holiday was declared, and millions of people across the country watched the festivities in Washington on television. They sat transfixed in awe at actually seeing the face of the man who had led the country through its most difficult times. Little else was shown from morning until night as regular network programming was temporarily rescheduled. News program anchor persons had a field day describing the event, while other newsworthy stories fell by the wayside. Congressional leaders, in a rare display of cooperation, voted funds to salvage the Texas and transport her from Mali to the Washington Mall, where she would be preserved and placed on permanent display. Her crew was buried in the Confederate cemetery in Richmond, Virginia, with great pomp and a band playing Dixie. Kitty Manock and her plane returned to Australia, where she was glorified and given a riotous down-under welcome. She was entombed in the Military Museum in Canberra. Her faithful Fairchild aircraft, after restoration, was to sit beside Sir Charles Kingsford Smith's famous long-distance aircraft, the Southern Cross. Except for a few photographers and two reporters, the ceremony honoring the contributions of Halecamille and Admiral Sandecker for their efforts in helping halt the spread of the red tides and preventing the projected extinction of life almost went unnoticed. The President, between speeches, presented them with medals of honor awarded by a special act of Congress. Afterward, Haller returned to New York and the United Nations, where a special session was called to pay her homage. She finally succumbed to emotion during the longest-standing ovation ever given by the General Assembly. Sandecker quietly went back to his NUMA office, worked out in his private gym, and began planning a new undersea project as if every day was the same. Though they would not win, Dr. Darcy Chapman and Rudy Gunn were named as candidates for a joint Nobel Prize. They ignored the hoopla and returned together to the South Atlantic to analyze the effects of the mammoth red tide on the sea life. Dr. Frank Hopper joined them after being smuggled from the hospital and carried on board the research ship. He swore he'd recover faster back in the saddle, studying the toxicity of the red tides. Hiram Yeager received a fat bonus from NUMA and an extra 10-day paid vacation. He took his family to Disney World. While they enjoyed the attractions, he attended a seminar on archival computer systems. General Hugo Bock, after seeing that the survivors and relatives of the dead from the now legendary Battle of Fort Fourreau received commendation medals and generous financial benefits, decided to resign from the UN tactical team at the height of his reputation. He retired to a small village in the Bavarian Alps. As Pitt predicted, Colonel Levant was promoted to general, presented with a United Nations Peacekeeping Medal, and was named to succeed General Bock. After recovering from his wounds at his family manor in Cornwall, Captain Pembroke Smythe was promoted to major and returned to his former regiment. He was received by the Queen, who presented him with the Distinguished Service Order, DSO. He is currently posted with a special commando unit. St. Julian Perlmutter, happy that he was wrong at seeing the American public take the reappearance of their most esteemed president and the belated expose of Edwin Stanton's treason in stride, was feted by numerous historic organizations and honored with enough awards to fill one wall of his house. Al Giordino tracked down the cute piano player he met on Eve Massard's houseboat in the Niger. Fortunately, she was unmarried and, for some inexplicable reason, at least to Pitt, she took a liking to Giordino and accepted his invitation to go on a diving trip to the Red Sea. As for Dirk Pitt and Eva Rojas,